Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and we're going to the Ale House.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
With the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading our patron-selected book of the month, because they hate us, To the Lighthouse by Virginia Woolf. And who's starting with a beer?
I'm surprised, bitches. I'm starting with a beer.
Holy shit. Yeah. Fuck the wagon, Jimmy.
No, Nate,
welcome,
you can say
back.
Your beer first. It's fine.
All right, so this beer is called Summer Sue by Toppling Goliath
Summer
Brewing.
Because Sue?
Summer Sue, they've got a
series of IPAs that have
called
Sue.
Something Sue. Yeah. Anyway, it's got a T-Rex on the front. That's Sue. Sue is the T-Rex. Anyway,
oh, okay.
Summer Sue because the book takes place in the summer, but because it's Scotland, it still fucking rains every day.
That makes sense.
This is a citrus ale.
So I'm pretty sure...
And it's quite citrusy.
That beer is like made in some sort of collaboration with the Field Museum of Natural History in Chicago. Because...
Is that a deep cut?
Sue is the name of one particular T-Rex specimen.
Their star T-Rex.
And so they have, you know, Sue, pseudo Sue is like the version Summer Sue.
It's nice. It's very citrusy.
I feel like fucking Ross from Friends with this dinosaur knowledge. Okay.
Well, mine is, I'm doing this because I had one in the fridge and it was too easy a connection to make. So I decided, how can I make it harder connection? Ignore the easy one.
That's what she thought for this book too.
Yeah. So this book is very, very complicated and it made me say, what? A lot? So this is 18 Watt by Single Cut. You know, I could go, oh, it's a light bulb, 18 watts. Like, no. What? Yeah. And it's an IPA, and we had it before. It's fine. It's perfectly good.
Yeah. And this book would have been improved if I just used one single cut across my wrists and didn't have to fucking read it.
That's
Jesus
part of
Christ.
The learning.
Can I say the, you guys do the read book, the reading book or the audio book?
The reading book.
Yeah, the reading book.
I started with the reading book, and then I was like, I'm really not getting anything from this. Fuck it. I'm listening to it.
I did the same thing.
I did the opposite. I was like, fuck that, audiobook all the way. And the woman reading it had the fucking wettest mouth. Did you notice that?
She did, yes. I did notice
that. It was just, I mean, people have criticized us for that, but we're drinking. This woman, it would just be like, and then he went to the lighthouse.
Do you know how much time I spend editing out those sounds? So
you don't get them all. Fuck
and you don't even get all of them. I then have to do more.
Nate, every time Nate drinks a beer, he gets some on his fingies and he has to like get it off there. And it's a horrible sound. We all do it. But we're not professional audiobook readers.
This is
a free
filters.
Product. This was a commercial product, and this woman had a mouth which sounded like it was both extremely dry and extremely wet.
Well, she got her mouth wet on her swim over to the lighthouse.
Oh, right.
From the lighthouse water.
It was so gross, I went back to the book. I was like, I can't focus on anything because this woman's mouth is upsetting to me.
Well, I listened to it very fast, so maybe it didn't bother me much or I didn't catch it.
It was, you did hear that, right, Nate?
I did, yes. I did notice that.
It's gross.
Just to get too technical, it's probably because of either the type of microphone or she was just holding the microphone too close to her mouth and that was picking up more of those sounds or the way it was like done in whatever studio. That's honestly the point because if we just back off the mic by an inch or so, and then suddenly you're not going to get those sounds anymore. And so that's all she had to do.
I guess.
Anyway, so let's
no
let's
one gives
talk
a
about
fuck about this book. So who cares about the quality of it?
Though we should talk about the book. So okay, here it goes. First, they don't go to the lighthouse. Then part two, people die, and then they do go to the lighthouse. All right, see you next week. See you next week, guys.
That is also what I got out of it.
The illuminating
plot.
You know what? I didn't get anything out of it either. I was confused. And I understood this book about and this is a real stupid one, as much as I understand $60 nachos.
Wow.
How could you? I mean, I was going to say they're fancy rich people. They would get $60 nachos, but they're British, so no, they wouldn't. But
this is like the most British book ever written.
$60 nachos make more sense to me than this book, I guess, what I'm trying to go for there. And this is by Who Farted, which is probably something those two guys in the lighthouse said a lot to each other. So
it was you.
Guilty. Okay, so this book came out in 1927. And then the Depression came.
Maybe because of this book.
It started with this, yeah. The stock market was all lighthouse futures. It collapsed. It was at the time it would have called modern, and now is just, you know, quaint. It's not about the plot. It's not at all. The philosophy and the introspection and the ruminating.
A stream of consciousness shit.
Yeah. It's a diarrhea stream because it's shitty. This is a themes book. That's what this is. It's like, what is she talking about while they do nothing? And there
Man's
are some that stuck out.
Inhumanity to man. Definitely it.
By the way,
it's my answer every time. Someday I'm going to get it right.
I mean, in some parts it's man's inhumanity to woman.
Yeah, that's definitely part
of it. There's definitely gender stuff in here. I thought, the one thing that I kind of noticed, because there were a bunch of past... Okay, so let's talk about the characters. There are the Ramses, or the families. It's Mr. Ramses.
Pharaohs of Egypt.
Yes, yes, and their daughter, JonBenet. And they are well-to-do Brits. I don't know if they're English or Scots or whatever.
He is a college professor. He is a philosophy professor.
So no one's quite sure why they're well-to-do.
They're not well-to-do. It's just that things were so fucking cheap back then that even a college professor with 8 children could afford to take his whole family to Scotland for the summer to the seaside. Because it was like the rent was like a halfpenny for the year or something like that. She actually does say what the rent was, and it was incredibly
low. Like a half a crown. But they're well enough to do that. They have like this. In the middle passage, that's not what that's called, the middle section, this old, toothless, poor woman who cleans their house.
For the 10 years they're not there or whatever.
Yeah, this crone just comes around and dusts things, and she's on the payroll. I mean, so they're socially higher and economically higher than at least some people. They're not like the landed gentry, but they're
He's a college right. professor, so he must be some measure of respectable about town.
And he probably came from a good family. Like, I don't think they had too many opportunities in this, what would have been the late 1800s for a, you know,
upward
Horatio Alger story of a little boy to go get his PhD in philosophy. But his Mr. Ramsey, who's a philosopher, and his wife, Mrs. Ramsey, I don't know if you can keep that straight, who I didn't even realize they had 8 kids until I looked up what the fuck this book was about. I think there's like 3 that have names.
Well, everyone mentions like constantly the guests at the house because they have guests that come stay with them. They're just like, how could they keep doing this with 8 children? How can you feed 8 kids on a philosopher's salary? That diagenic fuck.
Nice.
It's because they only wear barrels.
They all eat off one plate. Oh. They have no chairs. They sit on sew crates. So they, like 3 kids get names and kind of matter. But the wife, because it's 1927 England or wherever the hell they are, she is not a smart thinking person. She's very beautiful and is into like using the right salt or spoon for putting salt into your soup or whatever bullshit they have. And organizing dinner dates.
She is a middle-class housewife. That is her role of a proper middle-class British housewife in the end of the Victorian era and, you know, and having a proper home and caring for the children. And she does care for the children, and she kind of cares for everybody because the husband is just a grumpy, aloof jerk a lot of the time. But she's the one who's actually, like, cares about everybody. But she also, one of the things that kind of happens in this book, I use happen very loosely here, but technically there's a dinner party.
An action occurred.
She's very concerned about her soup, that to make sure that the soup is a hit at the party. Another funny thing about this book was that even though it's the most British book ever, they talk about how bad British food is, in that scene because she's like, oh, this soup is so good. And she's like, yeah, it's French. And they're like, oh, that must be it because British food so fucking bad.
And they mostly, though, if I remember, they talk about how not ecologically sound British cooking is. They're like, they waste everything. The French will eat anything. I think that is part. The British barely eat any part of the fowl, the guinea fowl, whatever bullshit that is.
Yeah, it's kind of also like there's arguments about who is the main character of this book. Some people say it's Mrs. Ramsay because it's largely from perspective. She's dead in the third part. Spoilers.
Spoiler.
But some people would also say
the lighthouse.
It's the lighthouse. Yeah. it was like a birdhouse in your soul. That they might be giants song. Like,
yeah, it's a great song.
I do know
that
song, yeah.
It's kind of like how Angela's Ashes were the main character of that book. The lighthouse is the main character of this.
Well, and people say it's from the perspective of Lily, who's one of their guests, who is an artist that stays with them and just paints all the time. And the way you get it from Lily's perspective is Mrs. Ramsay is good at that. And she's a housewife, and it's not that she's lacking in any abilities to do so. It's like, that's all she's allowed to do as a middle-class housewife. Like, that is what her time, she's in her 50s by the time the book starts. So when she was young, it would have been the late 1800s, and, women weren't just allowed to do whatever they want or anything, really, back then. So, like, she does this because that's all she's allowed to do. Whereas for Lily, it's a little bit, yeah, she finds meaning in it because she has no choice. She has to find meaning in it. So Lily's like, yeah, props to her, but I hope that never is what I'm forced to deal with. Because, 30 years later, may not seem like that much of a time, but those 30 years are a big change for women, just because they lose a generation to the war, generation of men. So,
but Lily apparently is supposed to be painting a portrait of the Ramses. And she's like, I don't know.
It took her 20 years to do it.
And there's some other, the other guests, who I can't remember their fucking names.
Tansleys
or something like that.
The Tansleys are the shitty marriage couple, and Mr. Banks, who's like the weird guy, something like that.
Is he the atheist?
Yes.
Like Banks, the atheist. Okay, what does that have
said,
to do?
Said with equal spite, the levels of when they say the Jew in a lot of other books.
I mean, it might as well Dickens be an books. Atheist. He's believing in the wrong one. But yeah, there were some like random lines in the book where I'm like, what the fuck is this? Is a religion a theme that I just completely missed?
Or the girl's Chinese eyes.
Oh, that was great. Maybe, you know what? They didn't say that she wasn't an adopted daughter.
I got the sense she was not.
was it Prue? Was that the one with the Chinese eyes?
I think Prue had Chinese eyes. No, because Prue is dead in the third part too, right?
Oh, so it must be Lily then.
No, Lily, because Lily's not one of the kids.
Maybe they're all Chinese. It never said what they looked like.
Yeah. They could still be Egyptian. They are the Ramses.
Maybe that was Virginia Woolf's way of telling us this was a diverse cast of characters. She's reminding, this is one that's Chinese.
Foreign exchange student that lives with them in the summers.
Definitely. In Scotland.
Yeah. Prue Lee is the... It reminded me of... I don't know what to make of this detail. I think it means she's squinting, but there's...
I think it just means, she has like just kind of narrower eyes, I guess.
But
or she was just very racist and was just holding them back all the time, which is possible.
Stop doing that. But it reminded me of when you see like weirdly named porn videos, and it's like she takes it in her Latin ass. Like, I didn't know she had multiple asses. Like, why do you have to specify? And it's her Latin ass. She's like, her Chinese eyes. Oh, okay. Very weird. So they have a thing, and I forget, who's the one that's like, women can't paint? That's like a bit of conflict.
Oh, yeah. I forget. One of their guests.
Was that the one that Mrs. Ramsay, that was the dude who Mrs. Ramsay was trying to get the girl who's painting? I forget her name already.
She's trying to set up Lily.
Who's trying to paint. She's trying to get them to marry. She's like, oh, they need to be engaged. They need
because
to marry.
Because they're both here.
And is he the one who said, oh, painting sucks?
Yeah,
is
Charles that, Tansley, is that the one? Yeah.
You know, okay. So I was like, well, that's silly. So one thing about the book is it like, shit, so it's third person.
It's shit, yeah. It's
shit, yeah, for sure. No, it's a third person omniscient narrator, but it's like very tight third person from their perspective.
But it's a distractible narrator. It knows everything, but can't stay on task.
Yeah, the ADHD omniscient narrator, yeah. Because it shifts whose sort of like perspective is being like described, or you know, whose perspective the book is from, like constantly, like all the time, sometimes mid paragraph or even mid sentence, and that's kind of what made this book unique or more like experimental, because like really this is called a work of modern literature, which is different than postmodern, which I'll talk about in a second. But and it's kind of like, the thing is about modernism, is as far as I could understand on Wikipedia today, is that it was like just a little bit weird. It's kind of like they're trying to go for a little bit different. I mean, to them, it was very different, but they're trying to go for a little bit different. So what does make this book different? It has no plot, or it has a very minimal plot, and it's about what the characters are thinking. And it shifts whose perspective is from, like, constantly. Now, it's not hard to follow, or at least it wasn't hard for me to follow exactly, because a lot of books are written in tight, omniscient, third-person perspective. Like, for instance, Game of Thrones is written exactly like that. The difference is that'll be like a whole long chapter, a whole long section from one person's perspective, and this shifts. It'll be kind of short, a couple, a page or two, and then it'll shift mid-paragraph or mid-sentence. So it's like, yeah, okay, that's different. And as far as I could tell, that's what Virginia Woolf was going for. It's like, she's going for, I'm going to try something different, new and kind of experimental. And that's the way she was doing it. But there was nothing in her experimental approach that kept her from being able to have a plot. She could have done all of those things and still have a plot at the same time.
It felt like, to me, there was no plot. Basically, there was a plot, but there was no real plot. It didn't matter. But it was an attempt to be like, you know, when you're reading a regular book, and it's be like, oh, would you like to go to the lighthouse? He said, thinking about his days as a child when he went to the lighthouse. Like, okay, sure, that makes sense. You're giving a little bit of thought to why they said it. This was like, would you like to go to the lighthouse? And then 6 pages of the context in which those thoughts arose from the depths of the beginnings of humanity and intergenerational and intergender relationships. Like, the first section is like, you know, 20, 30 chapters, right? And it's like 2 days, and people say about 15 things.
There's almost like, no dialogue.
Yeah, every time there's a line, there is, after that, an infinite amount of context, like more context, and the context for the context, and context for that context, that it seems to like, why do we think the things we think, and why do people say the things they say? And it's like, It is in a way interesting, but it is fucking hard to read. It is not a light read. And she's a modernist, and she's trying to do this thing. She's trying to, the stream of consciousness thing is basically trying to write the way that people think, which is in a way impossible, but like it's the way you can, your best shot. It's like describing a dream. You're like, oh, this, you know, the cheese monster was there. And, but, you know, since it was a Saturday, there was no tuna on sale. They're like, what? You're like, okay, sure. But if you wrote that out and tried to make sense of it.
But that is how thought works.
Yeah, it's hard.
Right? Like, because thought's instantaneous. You know, most of our thoughts come kind of fully formed and just in a movie, like they just kind of play. You're not like thinking, why do I think a BLT would be a good sandwich on a Thursday? Like, it just fucking happens. and the moment you think about something, you're like, why am I thinking of that? And like you could trace it back, and there's crazy connections between things.
The train of thought goes through many stations.
That's deep.
Sun Tzu.
It's Cornelius Vanderbilt, obviously.
So the way the book felt to me was, okay, if you compare it to a more typical novel, either of that time or of, you know, no, more our times, it's kind of like stuff happens to the plot, and then when something is like really dramatic happening to the characters, or they really like learn something, there's a moment where the author wants to say something poignant about what is the meaning of this kind of thing and blah, 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 blah. Virginia Woolf tried to make that the whole book. Like, the whole book is the moment of the poignant thing when the deep thoughts happen about the meanings of blah, 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 but no plot. She just wanted the whole book to be that part.
It was kind of like that, but the way I saw it was the poignant moments, you know, like the things that happen in our lives that are, you know, what should be the great, you know, poignant moments, the big important things. Like in this book, three characters die in an interlude, and you jump back after in the third part when the mother has died, two of the kids have died, one in the war and one in childbirth. Maybe the one with Chinese eyes, I don't know. But the poignancy is kind of, and the meaning of life is that what happens every day, like the meaningless things you don't think about, the little bullshits, everyday life is what give life meaning. Like living every day, just getting by, doing your thing is life.
But yet people die.
Isn't that what the first part, like the not conflict, but like the two different ideas proposed are, right? There's Mr. Ramsey's, he has this, like, they have these speeches about what is an important work, and, you know, to be remembered, and to, you know, what is the purpose? And then the wife's like, sometimes it's just nice to have a nice bowl of soup. Like, they have these totally different views of, like, the time scale of importance in life. Like, that's what's important. Like, Mr. Ramsey has this fucking dumb speech. I had to read it twice because I was so confused, but it was like, I am learning more about human thought than other people have learned, than most people have learned. Some people start at A and they only get to C, but I'm up to, like, goddamn Q. And, like, maybe I'll get
old. I had no idea what that section was about at all. It was like, and I got to Q. Yeah. And I'm like, okay.
I think he was just trying to say, I've learned more. And I, because his whole thing was like, I'm a philosopher. I want my works to be memorialized or whatever. You know, I want them to be remembered long after I'm gone. And then they have this,
I
want to
be famous.
But, like, momentous. Like, I want my work to be influential. And they're like, even fucking Shakespeare's going to get forgotten at some point. Like, even the immortal people of, like, they're not, yeah, that's not going to last forever either. And then the wife has this, like, very mindfulness approach, where she's like, let's just have a really good 5 minutes right now. And, like, those are two different things presented in the first half of the book. And then when they fucking just die, it's like, they're kind of like, see, you have to figure that shit out, because you might die off page in your own book.
One of the big, like, parables in Zen is, like, the big monastery head monk guy, he comes up and he says to this dude who's cooking, he gives him this long question, a really deep question, to sort of think about the nature of reality. And the monk is just like, the rice is almost ready. And the guy's like, oh, you have achieved enlightenment.
And he's like, no, it's two more minutes. It'll be.
Yeah. I mean, not yet. It's still going. I just said that. Like, be in the moment. Listen to me, fucker.
What if all the deep thoughts were Jack Handy deep thoughts in this book? As they're just, you know, plowing through the whole family dying of various things. And this is like, it is sad that a family can be torn apart by something as simple as wild dogs.
The wild dogs being the Kaiser.
Or if you drop your keys in lava, let them go, because, man, they're gone.
When you die, if you get a choice between going to regular heaven or pie heaven, choose pie heaven. It might be a trick, but if it's not, boy.
Speaking of pie heaven.
Oh, yeah.
Limitless rewards await us in the afterlife of pie heaven. And yeah, I think they will have stuff to say about that, actually.
I'm sure they will.
This book was chosen by our patrons because we asked them to pick a Virginia Woolf book, and they picked the hardest ones because they love to see us suffer. And what makes us suffer more than humiliation for all eternity on the internet? Even though you might forget it one day, it will still exist out there. And today is the day
it will become part of ChatGPT and live forever. These insults.
We will all be assimilated. So today we thank the patrons who made this possible. And we thank them by reading the names that they have given to us that their parents gave to them in a fit of cocaine-induced fury. For some of them, it seems, because who would name the children this? So
I have not today seen we'd like to wait.
Today we would like to thank Jeff, Avery, Black Rabbit of Inlay, Carol, Catherine, Colton, Daniel, Derek, Disgruntled Gruntle, Emotional Support Burrito, Ev, Gail and Seth, Hartley, Hayden, Howie, Feltersnatch. Yeah, okay. Sometimes I have to see if that's a real name or a fake name before I say it.
I don't think anyone's been named Howie in about 90 years. So.
There's a lot of Howie Mandel illegitimate children out there.
But he never Feltersnatch because he doesn't touch people.
No. There was a dental dam in place. Josh. Here's a name. Here's a name. I used to go to get my financial advice from Mike, but he always said to buy the dip. But then I learned he was talking about onion dip. Linda, meep. Midas Touch is never coming back. I don't know what that means.
Oh, is that foreboding? Is that Nathaniel?
It is.
Because he works for Dogfish Head.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
And they're not bringing that back. That's a bummer. That beer was awesome.
This is the game where we like to give Mike bad news as a joke and then watch him find out that it's news and is sad.
Wait, that was a whole big setup about that beer?
I don't know. No, his name is just called Midas Touch is Never Coming Back.
Oh, man. I don't even know what's happening anymore.
So what does he mean buy it now? Is that what he's saying?
I haven't seen it in a long while, actually, in stores.
Wow. This is getting real meta.
It's kind of like the book.
Yeah. Oh, God. We're getting too real. Nate's only pause account. Here we go. Here's another one. I know Mike's not a feminist because he sets an unrealistic expectation for bust size.
For bust size?
Yeah.
That is that's not nice. They don't know how Samoan I am.
How Samoan are you?
Samoa is how I order my food. Have Samoa. Okay.
Rack the Jipper, Stephen. The Wang Cream doth be cheesy.
That's
Thick Richard the Third. Ween.
I saw that on the that person liked it. I'm like, ew.
Yeah, I saw that too. It was uncomfortable.
A smegma joke. Nice.
William and Zaphod Beeblebrox. Two heads, one account.
Thanks.
One cup.
Thanks, patrons. You guys are great.
Oh, Nate, they said...
Except for one of you, only one.
I've been warned that yours might cross the line. I reserve the right to refuse it if it crosses the line too far next month, so don't worry.
Oh, great. Well, okay, I definitely don't take that out of context. If you want to support the podcast, if you like the podcast, just buy us a beer. Go to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub and buy us a beer. We're not trying to go pro and make this our day jobs, though that would be nice. That but you know what?
Exceptionally
buy us
dumb.
A beer. Stupider things have happened, though.
Much like I felt after reading this book.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's no plot to get through because we did that, you know. They don't go to the lighthouse because it's raining, and the kid hates his dad for being a dick. And then
he
there's
wants
an interlude.
To murder his dad.
Yeah. It's like, it's going to rain tomorrow. James wanted to stab his father to death with a gun.
He's like, if there had been a fireplace poker nearby, he would have killed that man. Because his dad's a dick. He's a philosopher.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about this. The kid is like cutting out pictures out of a magazine or something like that. And the mom is looking for shit to bring to the lighthouse to relieve the incredible boredom of the men who sit in the lighthouse. Anybody living in 2025 would look at the lives of the regular people in 1927. Like, man, how did they survive being so fucking bored? And they're like, man, those poor bastards stuck in that lighthouse. That must be like, How horrendous was that? What did they do? They just
like the whole first chunk was like, Mrs. Ramsey's like, oh, I have to go to town to do errands. Would anyone like anything? It's like, oh, she gets to do errands. What a fucking high point of her day.
But they were like, I mean, how many games of solitaire can you play?
8.
And it's not like the fun one where like the cards jump out of the screen, you know, when you get it all right.
Nope, nor the one with the spiders on it.
No, that hadn't been invented yet.
No, the technology didn't exist.
So I do think there's like the question of like, what is the right way to think about things? It's like, because time passes in weird ways. So Mr. Ramsey's thinking about time in like these long scales. Like you want to be remembered for centuries. And the wife is like, you just want to get through the 5 minutes in front of you. And then that's the thing I would try to say in the classroom. You know, if I was my professor, like, what did you think? I don't know something about that. I think there's something to it. I don't really know what else there is to say about it, but that's got to be one of the themes, right?
Sure. And then you die.
Yeah. There's a million themes. And then sometimes you die and you don't get better.
Most times that you die, you don't get better. Just Jesus managed to trick his way out of that one, apparently.
Sometimes people get better.
Except Tansley, allegedly. The atheist, wouldn't agree. There's a line, I wish I highlighted it, where it's like, he said as if he were saying there is no God, but it was saying like a fucking sentence.
Pass
like,
the butter, atheistly.
Yeah, something like that. Let me see if I can find the phone. He rose and stood in... Who is this talking about? Who cares? He rose and stood in the bow of the boat, very straight and tall, for all the world, James thought, as if he were saying, there is no God. What?
Well, he's flipping off the sky.
I mean, that's my second favorite quote in the book. Do you guys have a favorite quote? I'm sure you highlighted this passage now.
I mean, just the stuff about the Chinese eyes.
That was really great.
They really stood out, just because it was mentioned... Not too often, but more often than you needed.
Let me find this other gem. I'm not going to find it. There's a part where it says, like, they must come in, like, 18 different ways.
No, yeah, I had to remember that part, yeah.
it's like, for they must come, and they hadn't come, but they should
for
come.
For thou art a bad boy.
They should come all over the place. Need to come. To the lighthouse, wherever they can come. And it just kept saying come. And it's like, I know that's 100% not what's meant, but it was funny. And it was the one part of the book where I like woke up. The rest of the book was like reading Ulysses. Like the words happened to my face. And my brain was just like a victim of abuse. You just shut down. Don't just compartmentalize this. It'll pass. But then I woke up with the come passage. Because I'm 12.
Also, where the part where it says, men like boobies.
Oh, and they're talking about the birds. Yeah. They must be great boobies.
How would she know?
I mean, this is only shortly after people realize you shouldn't have guys in, you know, books like, ah, he ejaculated. Like
onto the boobies. Yeah, I
mean, he must come.
The other thing I highlighted was where they make fun of British cooking. What passes for cookery in England is an abomination, they agreed. It is putting cabbages in water. It is roasting meat till it is like leather. It is cutting off the delicious skins of vegetables.
Like, that's where all the good shit is. He said the next line is...
He says, in which all the virtue of the vegetable is contained.
The virtue like, of the vegetable. You sound like a goddamn fucking... taking people off a life support person, like a Terry Schiavo defender. Virtue of the vegetable must be preserved.
I wonder if he's saying, like, peeling the vegetables is like women showing their ankles. You know, it's not preserving their virtue anymore.
Unchaste vegetation. Exposing thine seeds.
They must come. So, then, anyway, so then part two, everyone dies. And then part three, Lily makes a...
No, part two is from the perspective of the house. The house, it becomes a character.
Not the lighthouse.
The house is like...
One.
Yeah, the house that they stay in, but the family isn't there because it starts with like, oh, and Mrs. Ramsey died. Yeah. And well, then they don't
part
come
two is
for 10
World
years.
War One.
It's all in there. It's all in there, man. Part
Yeah, no, it's like, it just goes, and it's not, it's very short, and it's like the house, and then the house started to, like, bad shit started to happen because no one was ever there to fix anything, and then the old woman is like, you know what, I'm just gonna clean out the house because maybe they're gonna show up. They left their clothes here and stuff, and so she literally, like, takes care of stuff and fixes the leaks and, you know, cleans it up, and then part three is, oh, and then 10 years have passed, and...
In case that wasn't clear, part two is called Time Passes.
It is, yeah.
Which is different than the original title of the section, because it was about Mrs. Ramsey's house, she being the maternal figure, who had eight kids. So we can only assume of her size, but it was Big Mama's house. And then they were like, that doesn't seem right. So Nate has never seen that film. And there might even be a sequel. Is there a Big Mama's House 2?
Oh, there absolutely is, yes.
Nate, did you see Big Mama's House?
I have not.
Martin Lawrence as a robust older woman.
Yeah, when he went through his clumps
for the
phase.
Of crime. It was, I think he was an undercover cop or something. I can't remember why.
Is this all copying Blue Streak Eddie Murphy when Eddie Murphy wearing the fat suit?
No, Blue Streak is where he was pretending to be a cop.
Oh, right.
Because he stashed his jewels in a construction site that ended up being a police station when he got out of jail. Big Mama's House, I believe he was an undercover cop who needed to dress as an old woman to spy on some. I don't fucking remember why.
But yeah, it was definitely an Eddie Murphy thing. In the early 2000s, people thought the only thing black men could do is play basketball or dress up as old black women. So
that was all that was allowed of them.
Medea, Clumps, and Big Mama's House were big moments in time. But thankfully, time passes. And we get to part three, the lighthouse. And you're like, oh, finally, let's see what's happening in this lighthouse. Spoiler, you don't see. But
that, what's that weird movie?
Oh, is that the fucking...
Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe?
Nate knows that
haunting
guy.
Film.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I'm familiar with that movie, yeah. And in fact, when I went on YouTube to look up To the Lighthouse,
that's all that
I got a bunch
up, right?
of movies about the movie The Lighthouse.
Because everyone else was like, please explain The Lighthouse to me also while you're at it.
What answers the question about what are those lighthouse keepers doing? They're going crazy. Murdering each other.
Jacking it a lot.
Probably.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they had to be.
That or fucking mermaids.
Or... If they could find fucking any. Mermaids, but they're jacking it.
Yeah.
It's like a mirage. So then, after half of his family dies or disappears from the book, Mr. Ramsey's like, I should go back to that fucking house that I have.
That I've been paying rent on for 10 years.
I'm almost paid a pound in rent over the last decade. So they go with another daughter.
With the housekeeper.
The son, James, who is like, I hate this. I hate you, Dad, so much. You tried to let me not see a lighthouse. I hope you die. And then let's go to the lighthouse.
And then the woman who's the painter is now like, hey, I think he's single and is like into him for a minute.
Well, she hates him also. Not hates him, but she's like, what a sad, dumb old motherfucker. And then like for a second, she can like kind of appreciate that he's just a guy. He's a nice enough dude and he's just probably pretty sad. Since his wife died, and he loved his wife a lot, even though he was a kind of a curmudgeonly old fuck. She can kind of be like, yeah, he's not the worst person in the world, but she's still an independent young woman, and she's going to paint, goddammit.
No matter what that atheist guy said.
So then in part three, there's a lot of reminiscing about how much they miss Mom, meaning Mrs. Ramsey. Oh, I remember her. And then she's like, and then the painter lady woman is like, you know what? I'm going to finally finish that painting. I've been thinking about that painting this whole time that I didn't finish, and now I'm going to finish it while everyone else goes to the lighthouse, and that counts as excitement in this book. No, I don't think she does. Does she actually
finishes the painting. That's the last line.
The whole time she's like, okay. I don't fucking know how to do this. What does it mean to paint and to create? And it's like, oh, fucking Jesus Christ.
She's trying to capture the essence of Mrs. Ramsey and not just a picture of Mrs. Ramsey, because she's a modernist artist as well.
But she can't capture her essence because Mrs. Ramsey's dead and she can't just, you know, milk her and get her musk onto it.
She took some before she left.
So this book was described as a modernist book, and I tried to look up, so if this is modernist, what's postmodernist then? So I tried to find out, and I'm sure I did not understand, but it seemed to me that like modernism is... let's be a little bit crazy. And then postmodernism is, let's be completely fucking crazy and see if anyone notices. And that's the entire difference between modernism and postmodernism.
I think it could be just in movies, but I think it's in books too. Postmodernism is aware that it is a book, like over the top, because they're trying to be like, this is a book. See, it's not a story. This is a book, not a thing, a real thing. It's like, I don't know. It's something like that. It's very strange.
I think postmodernism is meta.
Yeah.
Meta fiction, meta whatever. It's like, so, the fuck was that one we read? Crying Lot 49. That's postmodern.
Whereas merely this was, it's not like entirely different from all novels, except for the part about not having a plot. It's, you know, it's experimental, but not completely fucking weird.
Now, is this related to like just World War One in general, where like especially European creators were like, holy fuck, the world is broken. We should do things differently. Isn't that kind of like the where a lot of different movements came from after?
I mean, a little bit. What I found was like modernism is a lot is the Enlightenment, but then it was different from the Enlightenment, because the Enlightenment was about making advances in science and philosophy to provide human progress or to cause human progress. And modernism is about advances in science philosophy to cause human progress. And it was like, this sounds like the same fucking thing. And then postmodernism is holy shit, green. It is no, it's just totally fucking weird. So I felt it was like modernism, well, let's be a little bit weird, and then postmodernism is, let's just be really fucking weird.
I think it's like books before this were like, we've told a story, and, you know, we've told all the stories. There are stories, normally you write it down, and there's a story, and it's, you know, it could have a great meaning, or it might not, it might be pop bullshit, whatever. But what modernists try to do is, it's the difference between, like, you know, when they made paintings. People, you made these paintings that were so incredibly detailed and realistic. It was like, well, that's it. That, what else more could one paint? And then they made photographs, and they're like, well, what the fuck are we going to do? So then the Impressionists came out and said, you're trying to capture the feeling of a landscape or the feeling of something and get its, like, vibe in there. And that's what modernist literature tried to do. It would be like, you can't write words more exactly. So instead, you're trying to capture the feeling of something or how the mind works and put that on a page, and people will read it and say, like, I understand what they're going for. It might not make sense all the time, like an impression painting, like it's kind of blurry, but you get a sense of what they're going for through that. It's an attempt to describe the way the mind works. And, you know, it's hard because minds are complicated, and, you know, you think a billion things without even acknowledging that you're thinking them. So that's all. It's trying to capture that, and it's fucking hard and sometimes impenetrable. You can't read someone else's brain. Like, oh, mind readers. If mind readers actually just said, they'd all lose their minds because everyone's just spouting bullshit constantly at all times from all directions. It's like, oh, chocolate milk, honey dick. What the fuck?
Well, maybe you're thinking that, Jimmy. I don't know.
Yeah, that, like all the day, every day, just those four words. That's normal, right?
I think that's second or maybe the third best Parliament Funkadelic album. Chocolate milk, honey dick.
I mean, it was the name of the Honey Nut Cheerios Max Scott sex tape.
where the bee has sex with the Honey Grams bear.
All right.
Oh, I'm sliding into that booty. I'm a buzz.
Show you my Cheerios face.
Captain Crunch was filming it. So I had a real thought, and then this just erased it all. Oh, God damn it.
Capturing the brain.
That's postmodern.
That's postmodern.
That's post Malone modern.
Also because of all the use of all the use and subversive use of corporate mascots. That's very postmodern.
I saw a couple pieces of some random dude's art, and it was all just Captain Crunch giving people blowjobs. That was like, that was it. That was the art.
Don't forget the crunch berries.
Oh, Captain, my Captain.
Yeah, he sucks the plank. Captain Crunch is all about it. I do think we had the funny fun exchange on the text message about this book, where Jimmy said this was the book is at times a brick wall. As in the other half is when it's made by an even smarter little pig. And you said it's a house made entirely of English degrees.
It must be, man. I don't know. I mean, I know that this book isn't. I know this book isn't bad. I just know it was a bad time reading it.
My review on Goodreads is, yeah, I didn't get it. That's what I wrote.
There's a difference between books we didn't get and books that are objectively bad. And I know this book is not objectively bad. It's just not a book you like that you read like, ooh, it's a nice day. Maybe I'll read a book. And then you read this one, you're like, I've made a terrible mistake.
I asked a friend of mine who was a has a degree in English. I was like, did you ever read To the Lighthouse? And she was like, oh, yeah, in a class. I don't know anything about it, though. And she reads all the time. So it's a Sherpa book. If you were in the class and you had 4 weeks where you're going to be steeped in the context and someone's going to hold your hand, you might get to the end of it and be like, oh, I see what she was doing there.
I mean, we read it and we got, I read it. And then I went to look up a summary of it. It's like, did I miss something? It's like, no, actually, I didn't miss anything. I got every bit of the plot because there wasn't one. And in the rest of it, like, you know, we all got it. We got what she was talking about. Like, maybe we didn't get like every minuscule reference or bit or like appreciate everything of it, but we understood it. Like what she was talking about generally, like nothing was like, oh, this book is about, you know, the gender thing, or this book's about the nature of life and truth. Like, you know, we got that, but it's like, doesn't make it not fucking hard to read and hard to appreciate, because it's like reading a philosophy textbook, which is difficult. Like it's almost like reading fucking, I don't know, Kant. I've never read any of that and I never want to.
Remember that for punishment book time.
No, you can't.
Here, guys, it's the Critique of Pure Reason.
Diogenes nuts? D's nuts? I don't know.
So I gave up real quickly on trying to really get it, if you know what I mean. I saw early that it was like, oh, because when I looked up, it's like, oh, this is really not about the plot. It's like, oh, okay, I'm not going to pay attention to why Jimmy hates his father and the blah, blah, blah. I'm just going to like, I'm just going to let it wash over me. I'm just going to like listen to it and hear the nice words. And I was like, ah, okay, it was all right. Which I know is kind of like saying,
hear the nice
when
words.
You don't read the bad book, it's not that bad. I realized that's kind of what I just did there. But I was kind of like, you know, it had some nice things and I didn't completely hate it. But it's because I didn't, I lowered my expectations so much, you know, because the key to happiness is low expectations. So I just lowered them enough and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like going to an art museum and seeing a painting and be like, yeah, that's a nice painting. But you're not understanding, like, the context behind it and like, oh, well, this is what they're doing here is this. There's, you know, this is part of the great lavender pigment wars of 1816. You're like, I don't know what the fuck any of that means. It's a nice picture of a boat. Who cares? You know, you can appreciate something and not get it. And you can also be like, sure, that's nice, but I never am going to think about this again with anything but, huh?
With art, you could like it more when you don't get it. Sometimes when they explain to you, like, oh, really? That's what they're going for? Fuck that.
Yeah.
With a book, I don't know if you can quite do that. But
well, that was like in fucking what was that? The Japanese guy Ishiguro with Never Let Me Go, mm-hmm. Never Let You Go, where it's like, well, this is really a think piece on the
British class system.
Conflicts. It was like, what? What the fuck? No. No, it isn't.
Yeah, I thought they were just stealing like those kids' less. Kidneys.
Yeah. At least I could guess like it'd be like a, you know, colonialism thing, maybe, or like a exploitation of the third world pretty easily, but like, oh, no, this is about public versus private school in the British era. I was like, fuck you. No.
Yeah, this was like one of the greatest English novels of the 20th century, this book.
Yeah.
I could name...
Capital G great.
Yeah. You know what's also capital G great? Goosebumps. I could name 100 Goosebumps that were more interesting to read than this. Obviously, no one should read this, right? We're only your enemies?
No.
Who should?
Probably no one we know.
No, we're like monkeys. Like, we don't understand anything. This is a punishment to us. This is the year of punishment books. We're just getting hammered with bad books.
It started off much better. I don't know. It was. I wouldn't recommend it to anyone I know who's like, even people who read a decent amount. There's like, this is more of like a book for people who are into philosophy and the meaning of things that books talk about, rather than, is this a good book?
So what you're saying is, who's afraid of Virginia Woolf? We are. We're afraid of Virginia Woolf.
I'm fucking scared of her now. I've never read one of her before, and I've heard this is like her best, but also like one of the hardest. So maybe there's some more accessible stuff out there, but I'm scared 100%.
I read in very loose air quotes, A Room of One's Own in high school. Senior year, we had to read that.
I can't imagine a group of people less equipped to read Virginia Woolf than high schoolers.
Well, that one's non. That one's just like an essay about what it is to be a woman writer. And that to be a woman writer, you need to have money and a room of one's own. Because
that's pragmatic.
Society doesn't allow for it, whereas it allows. Yeah, I get that. It's true. And that's in this book. So that was like the one thing. It's like, I know that one tiny thing that I might be misremembering because it was fucking 20 years ago, but something about that. And then it's like, oh yeah, clearly, Men and Women, England, 1927. Got it.
It was her 75 years early critique of the internship system.
We give them their own rooms?
No, they're saying to have an internship, you must already have money and a room of your own.
Oh, sure, yeah. You need a trust fund of one's own.
Yeah, poor kids aren't allowed to have internships. They need to get regular jobs.
Well, yeah.
Like, women can't be writers.
Well, judging from To the Lighthouse, I don't know if they can, because this book fucking sucked. Ass. I know it's a good book in a smart person way, but don't ever read it.
It's not for reading in the sense of I'm going to read a book. It's a think piece.
It's a study.
The 200 page New Yorker article.
Oh, of just New Yorker cartoons with no punchline.
We're the punchline.
Sure. Okay. I don't even know what's happening anymore. Kind of like how we started with the whole book.
Well, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Or go to the Patreon, patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub, to support the podcast and make us say more things about what may be a very real glandular problem I have.
And check us out on all the socials and join us on Goodreads and tell us your thoughts on every single Goosebumps book. If you forget one, I will delete the rest.
And if you can find it, send us Goosebumps, because it's still...
Please send us the picture of Goosebumps. We're crowdsourcing this. You'll know it when you see it.
You will. And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.